name is Barry Allen. I am the fastest man alive.
RandomChatter.com presents a Flash podcast.
You see that red blur?
Dedicated to the discussion of the Flash television series.
A lot to discuss.
Scarlet Velocity.
Run, Barry, run!
Welcome to Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Thanks for slowing down for a moment. I'm your host, Josh.
And I'm Dr. Ronnie Stein. Martin Raymond. I'm so confused, man. I keep hearing these voices in my head.
One of them is me. Well, you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show, The Flash, with discussion and commentary on the various episodes. So my friend Ronnie Martin, you know what? Jay, is that really you?
I keep hearing these voices. I can't tell. Josh, is that you talking to me or is that in my head?
You're in there. You're in there. Are you sure that's you? Wait a minute. What's my favorite color?
Plaid.
Oh, that's right. Okay. All right. I guess it's you.
Good.
Well, I'm glad that one of you could join us today.
I think I got this. I got it. I'm under control.
You got it? Okay.
Yeah.
Just let it flow out. Whoever wants to talk to me at this time. So are we talking to Jay this time?
Reagan's not here right now.
Well,
there is no Dana, only Zool.
We are going to talk about the multiple personalities that is the Nuclear Man, Firestorm.
Firestorm. Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about this episode, and then we will get into Mr. Storm.
The 13th episode here of season one.
Wait, hold on.
Oh.
Okay. All right. We can go.
All right. You good?
Yeah, we can get. I think. Hold on. All right. I'm good.
Tossing the salt over your shoulder.
Yep.
So this episode was called the nuclear. Oh, come on, I'll get it. Hang on. Nuclear man. Boy, that is tough.
That's very good, sir.
And it originally aired on February 10th of 2015, written by producer Andrew Kreisberg and Catherine Walczak, and then directed by multiple directorial dude for Flash and Arrow, Mr. Glenn Winter.
Multi-directorial dude? Is that his title?
I believe.
At CW?
Yeah, MDD. It's like Glenn Winter, MDD, it says after his name, usually for multi-directorial dudes.
So. Excellent.
But on this very sexy Valentine's episode, it's always, of course, a special time in a young man's life when he's getting ready for that first date with a young lady. He can't decide what to wear, unsure where to take her, trying to figure out what to try or when to try for that first kiss, getting a call from his scientist friends, you know, calling on you to catch a man who's merged with another man and now set his head and hands on fire and flies away. You know, just that typical, you know, romantic stuff that always happens.
Oh, yeah.
If Barry really wants to make the new relationship with Linda Park work, though, he's going to have to try to help Ronnie Raymond and Martin Stein separate before they blow Central City up with a nuclear reaction. I'm sure our friends at Star Labs will help, of course, but Cisco's been busy working with Joe West to uncover new clues in Barry's mom's murder, and it might just involve people that we know. And, of course, just when we thought everything was going to work out in an hour and stay calm for a week, General Eiling decides he's going to make another appearance and bark some orders at his subordinates there.
Barking is a good way to describe his voice.
Yeah, and it was I was like, they're running out of time. I think this is just going to end with the boom. And then there was not just the boom. There was a little bit more. But it was a really quick, what do they call this, like tag, I guess.
Yeah, but it was part of the show. It wasn't a preview, so we can definitely share that as we discuss. So, but no, it didn't get all worked out in an hour this week. Jeez.
Nope. They got worked up.
They did?
Yeah, Barry was getting all worked up.
Ooh. Well, I think we'll talk about that too. That was an important scene. But, you know, first, there's a little bit of news that we want to share before we get starting talking about this episode. It's casting news this week, but it's kind of interesting casting news and timely if you're into The Walking Dead. But if you, you watch Walking Dead?
I have up to the break, and I am not watching it after the break because, as I have talked to a couple friends about this, the show really depresses me.
I can see that.
And it, you know, I mean, it's just, it doesn't make me feel good. It makes me anxious. Unlike when I watch The Flash, where I'm cheering and whooping and excited to watch it, and life's just kind of too short to watch stuff that doesn't please you. And not to slight anybody that does watch it. I think there are some interesting things that go on with the characters, but ultimately we're living in the zombie apocalypse for that show, and everybody's going to die at some point. You've got to lose people. And so I'm kind of out at this point.
I think I just started watching to see, I wonder how they're going to kill that guy.
Yeah.
Let's check it out. Well, speaking of which, geez, I guess if you haven't caught up on The Walking Dead, pause for 30 seconds. One of the deceased characters on The Walking Dead, known as Beth, who's played by Emily Kinney, will be joining the cast of The Flash.
That's very cool. She's a really good actress, and I'm looking forward to seeing her show up on another show just to get some perspective on how good an actress she actually is.
Well, we'll hear this. It might be a spoiler of sorts, but the character that she's going to play is the Bug-Eyed Villain.
Bug-Eyed Bandit.
Bug-Eyed Bandit. You're right. Sorry, I'm looking at villain and a Bug-Eyed Bandit. So I'm curious how they're gonna make her bug-eyed, and also how they're gonna get the goatee on her, because the Bug-Eyed Bandit has a nice little facial hair there, and he's actually an Atom villain, isn't he?
He is. I believe that he originally appeared in Showcase, or you know, one of those other comics that the Atom started in.
Okay. Well, I don't know anything about the Bug-Eyed Bandit, but I'm interested in kind of seeing how they turn her into him, it, they, Buggy. So that's pretty cool. So that's our casting news for the week. But I'm kind of itching to talk about this episode. Now I kind of poked around the interwebs this week, and this one got some mixed reactions. This episode.
Yeah, I gave it mixed reactions as well, because while my initial watch of it, I thought it was funny. I really enjoyed it. I had a great time. Firestorm came back. I was like, oh, this is great. And but then, you know, there were a lot of different reveals, especially with the Cisco Joe West story. But then kind of on second, you know, analysis of things that were going on, I was kind of like, that's weird. Why did that happen? What's really going on here? There were probably more questions that got raised, at least from me, in that second analysis / second viewing. Mm-hmm. And some of them seemed to be... I'm always hesitant just to call stuff sloppy writing, just because I feel like this show has proven that they do take their time and think about stuff, but there were just errors in judgment, or, hey, we kind of are just moving on this and it's really cool, so we're going to leave it. But then when you kind of analyze it, it falls short of.
Okay. I've heard people say that. It's similar to what you've said, you know, although I think you were a little more eloquent in some of the comments that I saw.
Thank you very much.
But, you know, and I think as we progress talking about this, I'm going to address my feelings about that because I think I see where people are coming from, but I don't necessarily agree.
Okay, well, yeah, because I mean, I have some specifics that I want to touch on as we get through talking about different things here. Yeah, I think I've got some of the notes down here. So maybe you can use me as your Or I'll use you as a sounding board. Or
yeah, yeah. Oh, and I respect people's feelings. I think the reason that I disagree, I think hopefully I can make clear and be as eloquent as you. But so you were right. This was a sexy Valentine's Day episode, more so than what they kind of teased us with last week's episode. I think for my family, at least for my wife, as he was finally hooking up there with Linda, as Barry was hooking up with Linda Park, I think her exact quote was "Finally." So apparently,
well, she got multiple, and your wife got to enjoy multiple shirtless characters on The Flash this week.
Yes, she did. Well, and some of the multiple scenes were because she kept rewinding. So
okay.
But hey, either way, you know. Hey, she's watching with me.
Forward,
so I'm not going to complain.
Forward, back, forward, back, forward, back, forward, back.
I don't know. I've seen visions of Robbie Amell floating in my bedroom lately. So okay, but anyway, you know what? Since this was a very Firestorm episode of Flash, let's talk a little bit about Firestorm first. And I kind of think it was now. I didn't say it was a perfect episode, as far as
this could
my
have been
feelings.
A spinoff for the new Firestorm TV show.
It almost really could have. I will say on the top of our comments here that actually I'm not enjoying the Firestorm storyline as much as I thought I was going to. I'm not as not as much as some of the other ones like the Reverse Flash and stuff. But
yeah, I don't know. Firestorm is an interesting enough character, I think, because you've got this duality, which. I mean, it makes for some interesting, you know, maybe it's because we understand what's going on with the character that, you know, these two characters are fused. And, of course, for viewers of the show that are not into the comics mythology, it's like, whoa, okay, it's obviously Ronnie. Wait, how is it not Ronnie? How is it Martin Stein? You know, all those kind of questions that they would have, you know, get answered. But for us, we kind of know that.
Yeah. And, this might be a selfish reason, but I almost think he's a little bit too big of a hero to focus on this series right now. Is that selfish?
For you or for the show? I guess I'm missing. Who are you saying is being selfish?
Me.
Oh, okay.
I feel like I'm being a little selfish in saying, well, you know what? I don't want that kind of a.
If I'm going to watch The Flash, I want to watch The Flash, not Firestorm.
Well, no, I mean, and not forever, but I kind of feel like, you know, this is The Flash's first season. It's doing really well. It's, you know, it's built up a heck of a following, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it tremendously, and I'm almost, like, not ready for another big villain. Now, you know, we had Arrow, which I would say is a bigger superhero. I said villain. I meant hero. Superhero. Yeah. And, you know,
They go hand in hand.
Yeah, that's true. You know, I know we're going to see Brandon Routh as the Atom appearing here, but those are cameos, you know, and I feel like I don't know that you can really get rid of. I don't want him to get rid of, but I don't feel like you can kind of push aside Firestorm for many stories if he's going to feature so prominently as a character that is close to the main characters like Caitlin. They may still do that. I have no idea, but
Josh, he blew up at the end of the episode.
Oh, well, that takes care of that problem.
Yeah.
Well, somehow I have a feeling.
No, they're not going to just have him blow up.
It's yeah. It's not like he got an arrow through the eye or something. No,
of course not. I wish you would not bring that up. You guys need to go back and listen to the first season or first, I don't know what, third episode of our first season of Arrow.
I'm using that until the final episode of the final
I am
superhero.
Terribly embarrassed by that. Back when I didn't know what the producers really wanted to do for these kind of shows, I was like, oh, well, they killed that guy off pretty quick.
Now, don't get me wrong. I like Firestorm. I've always liked Firestorm. I am not a Firestorm hater. I am a fan. I was just being, like I said, a little selfish toward my Flash. Right
I understand.
Now.
No, I completely understand. I mean, you know, when you watch a show about, you know, Sherlock Holmes or whatever, you don't want to see a lot of John Watson or you know, something like that. That may not be the best other analogy. But I kind of forget that Firestorm is probably – he probably is a little bit more in the public knowledge than I think that he is because – I mean, he was in cartoons a whole heck of a bunch in the mid-80s. I think he was in – the Super Friends had him as a Super Friend for an entire season, at least, with Galactic Guardians.
I remember so, that.
He's been around, you know, off and on since the mid-80s when he was invented, when he was created. So, but I don't know. I mean, it's your opinion. I mean, you can be selfish if you want, and I understand where you're coming from.
And some of that is based on things I don't know. I have no idea where they're going to go with him, what's going to happen. Sure. And I am enjoying watching. So don't get me wrong. So, and I'm glad they're kind of progressing it at least. You know, he'd been kind of just popping around here and there in the series with mm-hmm. not much resolution or movement forward. So I'm glad they're right. doing more with him now. So, and clearly he needs his own episode for that, but
or two. Yeah, for them to get to the 13th episode, which is basically just over halfway, and to give an entire episode over to him, and it's a character that has been around since, I mean, in some fashion or another, since the pilot. They've been discussing him since then. So, you know, I mean, that's pretty good, you know, all things considered.
Oh, absolutely. And I enjoy it. So let's talk about him a little bit. Now,
okay.
At the beginning, we see him, and it is, you know, okay, so when I say him, at least for now, I'm going to assume we're talking about Martin Stein and not Ronnie Raymond, because we haven't really seen any, I don't think in this episode we didn't really see any of Ronnie at all, did we? Or maybe at the...
Well, you see his body, but yeah, every time...
Well, yeah, I saw his body. I saw over and over,
yeah,
thanks
yeah,
to
well,
my wife.
I know,
but
I know.
But I mean,
yeah, but it's Ronnie's body, but we have to go with what they've told us on the show, and that it's actually Stein's intelligence,
personality,
brain, whatever.
Yeah.
Personality, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so at the beginning, Stein's looking for this guy named Quentin Quayle, who we don't really learn too much about other than that he went to school with Martin Stein. He's known him for a long time. And yep. He is some kind of a scientist as well.
At Concordance Research. That's the name of the building that he's working at, that Quentin Quayle's working at.
Right. So what I really was not clear about is why is he looking for him? But was he looking for help? He did say, I need your help, or you're going to help me, or something like that.
Yeah.
But that was right before he blew up and, you know.
Yeah, what's interesting is that so he's finding his friend who's working at this other lab than where Stein was working, because we heard previously Martin Stein was working at Mercury Labs, which is where Tina McGee works. So there's Mercury Labs, there's Star Labs, and then there's this Concordance Research. He obviously doesn't know what's going on with him, and I'm trying to remember, was that the point before or after that he looked in the mirror in the alleyway and saw the newspaper that said it had been a month since the explosion?
Well, I think that was kind of like a flashback. At least that's how I took it.
Yeah.
No, do you mean when Quentin Quayle? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah. So where did Stein go to see Quayle? Was that the flashback?
No,
or are we
that wasn't
that
the
was
flashback
current?
Because they even mentioned that, you know, the it was on the news, right?
Oh, right.
Somebody
yes.
had... got burned by the Burning Man.
That's right.
You know?
Okay. So, yep. So it's been a year, and he goes and meets Quayle.
Right.
Hmm.
So now, I you know, I said he asked for help right before he kind of got all ignited there. But he seemed like he was almost angry about something, you know, and maybe he wasn't. Maybe he was losing control, and that's why the flames burst out. For whatever reason, he seemed like he was getting emotional, like he was angry at this guy. So is he going for revenge or
what? Yeah, I don't know. I wonder if it has something to do with the fact that he took that Firestorm Matrix to Star Labs, you know, before the particle accelerator exploded. Like, why is he just wandering around with this thing, or why is he going to the particle accelerator? Like, to ask Wells for help, because it doesn't seem like they were on any kind of speaking terms based on Wells's reaction to talking to the wife.
Right. He made the, he, made a lot of
people.
He was
a little bitter.
Yeah. So
it would have been nice to win one of these awards. Oh, look, he won three.
Well, wow. Wells doesn't strike me as the kind of person a lot of people get along with. But
yeah, that's true.
But it did seem like he was going to Star Labs with a purpose because he had the Firestorm, or was that what they – I mean, it was just
– Yeah, they're calling it the Firestorm Matrix, I guess,
Matrix,
or something like that.
Right.
Yeah, the glowing ball.
So I don't think he was going there with any, harmful, revengeful purposes, whatever, to Star Labs.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's
– But maybe he was.
That's the mystery, and it's like what set him off or what
– Right. So
how is Quayle involved?
Stein is still a mystery to me, you know, and what we know from Firestorm based on our prior knowledge of the comics is that he's a hero. He's a good guy, but there is some conflict within him.
Right.
Right. So so that has something, you know, something important there. Now, we did get what might be a little clue as to what his problem is, either with the Firestorm Matrix or why you might go to Quayle or why you might go to Wells, is when Eiling shows up. So General Eiling shows up at the end and clearly knows something. Now he knows
what a nuclear blast in the Badlands
yes,
of Central City means.
Well, yes, but he also knows the name Firestorm.
Right.
So whether that was the project that Stein was working on or he knows what's happened to Stein, it wasn't made
well,
clear
I mean,
anyway.
It was the name of the project that Stein was working on, but is it that it was a project that was being worked on for the military?
But he knew when the nuclear explosion went off that it was Stein and it was Firestorm. So he was going out to
Did
get
he say
some.
Stein?
No.
Just remember him saying Firestorm.
No, but yeah. What? Why else? I mean, why else would he know that the blast... You know, I mean, he might not – he didn't say specifically by name, but he knows it's all connected, right? And
right.
He's going out there to get something. You know, I mean, a nuclear explosion just went off. Normally, you don't think, well, there's not going to be anything left to go get. So he knows there's something there. And I suspect that he knows that Stein will be there.
He's been hanging out with a lot of people that explode.
Well, yes,
he in this
does.
Series. First Plastique, now Firestorm.
That's his area of expertise. Maybe that's what he really wants, something that's a potential
weaponized.
And not just weaponized, though, because, I mean, a lot of these characters could be considered, you know, weaponized, but a large-scale weapon.
Right.
You know? So, okay, so anyway, I had some questions about Firestorm that I'm sure will be made clear, probably some sooner rather than later.
Mm-hmm.
But that's something I wanted to think about. Why is he going to these people? Took him a long time to go to Quentin Quayle, and he didn't seem real happy about it. Quayle.
Yeah, obviously Stein's memory is fragmented. I mean, which is why you can say, you know, he's not thinking clear until he got the little drug cocktail that Caitlin put together for him, because he is experiencing the dissociative identity disorder, you know, so. But yeah, what was driving him to that? That's a good question. I hadn't even really thought about that, but you're right. That's
so
there's got to be some reason for that.
That makes him an interesting character to me. So I again, not dissing on the Firestorm. For all of you, you don't have to let me know. I know there's some Firestorm fans out there. Some of my friends are big Firestorm fans. So,
oh, you don't have to be an apologist for them. They can't handle it. You know what? If you don't like the heat, stay
go to the Badlands.
Firestorm Badlands area. Yeah, whatever.
All right. So, well, let's talk a little bit about Flash, since this is a Flash podcast, you know, it's not called Fire Velocity or whatever. Work on
all
that.
Right, you leave the names to me.
Yeah, I'm
okay.
Going to do that.
I do the names around here.
Now, I'm dying to talk a little bit about Cisco and Joe.
Yeah.
Okay. Teaming
so
up.
So Barry's mom.
in a nice little cop duo. They could have their own little partnership show there.
That's going to be a spinoff right there, I think.
So it's like the Streets of Central City, a Quinn Martin production.
Oh, that's awesome. Great. I love it.
So they go to Barry's house, the old house where he grew up.
Yeah.
Where his mom was murdered.
Yeah. 14 years ago or 15 years ago, whatever.
Knock on the door. New owner.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's more than accommodating, I thought. Didn't she?
Pum, 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 pum.
Have you ever gone back and visited one of your old houses?
Pum, 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 pum. Oh, I don't go up and knock on the door, though. I just drive by and take pictures of it from the street.
You don't, but so you've never actually gone into one of your old houses and talked to people? I haven't either. I'm always wanting to do it. I never have the nerve.
Actually, as a child, there was only one house. So my parents still live in the house that I grew up in
me too.
Like I was seven. So, I often go to that house. But no, not the original house that I spent my first 7 years in.
No, so. Nobody like that answers the door at your old childhood house?
Bum, 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 bum. No.
Okay. Well, anyway, they go in. She's more than accommodating. And they go and they investigate the room where Nora was murdered and and discover not a whole lot except for the big piece of furniture that's still in there.
Well, she must have bought it at an estate sale. That makes perfect sense.
All right. It's a little convenient, I'll admit. But
no. What is convenient is... Hang on a second. And I'm not even complaining about the 3D hologram map from a 2D projection.
Good, because I like that.
On silver nitrate. I thought that was awesome. I mean, I can totally buy Cisco doing that.
Hey, this is Star Labs, man. They are going to have cutting-edge technology that you're not going to see anywhere
else. Quantum physics.
Yes, there is no iPhone app that'll do that. This is Star Labs, for crying out loud.
Okay. No, what bothered me is the... It looks like there's something on the back wall. Wait, this is new wallpaper. Look, there's blood under it. Who the hell just papers over blood? Oh, there's blood on this wall. I'm just going to lay some...
Well, I don't want to touch it.
Wallpaper right over the top of it. What?
I mean, it's like putting toilet paper on the toilet seat, you know? You just don't want it to be anywhere near your body.
It's like... It's convenient, and it's, you know, one of those plot point kind of things that it's like, we would never have seen that. Did Sherry do that? Why would Sherry do that? And what did they say? They, like, told her to go get coffee or something like that? It's like, because it's now night, and they're messing around in her house. It's like, oh, yeah, I had her go out.
She seemed more than willing to accommodate them. So,
bum, 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 bum.
Oh, all right. Okay. Yeah, that was a little. All right.
Other than the cool stuff they were doing in the house, the coming to the house. Hey, we want to come in and investigate this 14-year-old murder. Oh yeah, I knew about that. That was crazy. Hey, you want some coffee? and the blood under the wall. You know, there was. I like that they found out that stuff, but the getting them into there, and I don't have a better idea. It's just...
Maybe something in the corners or something. You know, maybe a corner that was behind a piece of furniture or something. On the ceiling. You know, who checks the ceiling? I don't know.
Right. I don't know.
All right,
it didn't have to be visible. Like, they could have seen that there was there. They ripped the paper off, and it's not there, but then he uses his little UV...
Super light.
You know, because it's like what Grissom uses on CSI, right?
Except they weren't looking for seminal fluid. Or were they? I don't know.
Not going there. This was a very sexy Valentine's Day episode of The Flash, though. Josh, we need to stay PG-13. I'm just reminding you.
Okay, this is CSI. CSI. All right. No, I agree with you.
Think about dead puppies.
Whole
kennel of them.
That was one thing that kind of drew me out. I was able to kind of do what Joe did, which was just kind of shrug his shoulders.
I will not judge you.
Okay, but let's talk about the blood real quick. Okay,
right, because that was a really important clue, plot wise for the series, and I think this is going to be huge. This is what, this is the turning point for this portion of the story in the Who Killed Nora?
Right.
Allen.
Now, the biggest thing wasn't that Well, I don't know. I don't know, but you judge by this. Was the biggest thing that one of it was Barry's blood, or was the big thing that the other one wasn't Wells?
Yes. No. For me, the biggest thing was that it was not Wells's blood.
Yeah, me too. That was the most important
because
thing for me.
Because we speculated way back in our first episode, 13 episodes. Remember 13 hours ago when we were talking about the first episode and we speculated that Barry was actually at that location. Mm-hmm. But not young Barry, adult Barry. I didn't have any of the cool P16 stuff to talk about at that point. But I mean, I think for us, again, as people who have read versions of this story, I think that is the confirmation we were waiting for. Wait a second. Wells is the Reverse Flash, right? Wait, but Wells's blood wasn't there? So how is that fast? What the heck is going on? But for the average viewer who may not realize anything that's going on with that, or not as much. I think the biggest reveal is Barry was there. What? How is that possible?
Yeah, I can see that. And you know what? Some of that ties into how I'd like to sum this up and my feelings on this particular episode. Because that's you're absolutely right. That's how some of my family reacted when they found out it was Barry's blood.
So they thought Barry's blood was the biggest reveal, while you thought not Wells's blood.
Yes. Not Wells's blood was not the biggest reveal. Anyway, if it's not Wells's blood, whose is it? Who could it be? Now, of course, we've speculated on who it is, and I think I've made it clear who I'm guessing is Reverse Flash, based on just gut feeling alone and no real evidence at all. But, you know, can they check anybody else? Who else could they check? I can't see why they would check.
Why
who
would
I think
Eddie's
it is.
Blood not be listed in the in their database that they're checking? I guess.
Oh, okay. So you're saying that it was like they could run it through and eventually it will come across.
Well,
Eddie?
Right. So Joe asked him to check the blood against Wells, and he's like, "What? I'm not going to do that. That's crazy." And so then Joe says some, you know, sage words of advice, and Cisco listens and decides to do it anyway. So, I mean, it sounds like he was checking it against a database. Like, why? So he checks it against Wells, but how? Why would he decide to check it against Barry's? And then if he's checking it against a bunch of, you know, like some blood data, right? The Central City blood database.
Okay.
Right?
Like, see, and I was thinking like criminals. Like he would check criminals, and he wouldn't check Wells.
But then
Wells.
Why would Barry show up?
Exactly. I mean, yes. Again, I didn't think about that.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, maybe Barry had some bad high school years. I don't know.
Possibly.
Oh, interesting. Jeez, I didn't think about that. Maybe. Okay. Well, we'll see. Maybe if they do come across whose blood this is. You know, like I said, I think we've said multiple times, and I think even the producers have said that Yellow Flash will turn out to be somebody we know and have met on the show. It's not going to be some big surprise. Well, and by the way, I know
his name is Tom Cavanaugh.
Not the one that was there.
Not the blood sample of Wells that they have now, but the blood sample of Wells that they will have then.
That was a good way to get out of that. I don't.
That's.
All right. All right. Well, let's talk about Wells a little bit.
Okay. Because I've.
You got more about this blood?
I keep revising my. I'm really digging myself. I just keep digging and hoping that I uncover something here as I go.
Wait, we're talking clearly, and now we have, I'll say, proof. Or at least strong evidence. We're dealing with time travel here. So any speculation we make, you know, could lead to some sort of weird paradox. So it's okay. You can go in whatever direction you want. Change as many times as you want.
So Wells did it and Wells didn't do it. So no. So based on, gosh, Tom Cavanaugh is really playing this character. I mean, they're writing the character well, but he's also playing it really well because, you know, we keep talking about, okay, he's a bad guy. Wait, no, he's really got compassion. He's a bad guy. Wait, he's compassionate. And this one, it's like whatever he's using the stolen tachyon prototype for, he decides to, quote, change his timetable, according to Gideon, and use it to make this quantum, what to do it for, Firestorm. And it's like, wow, you know, if this guy is really set on traveling, you know, through time, mm-hmm. potentially, or something like that, that's, you know, that's pretty noble. So I'm almost feeling like he's from the future, and through some accident, he was thrown into the past. But he knows that if he can get so he's familiar with the Flash in the future. Like, he knows all about the Flash and that Barry's the Flash and all this kind of stuff, right? He's got the future knowledge. I think that he is using Barry to get to a point where Barry has the powers to travel through time so that Wells can then take the power for himself and use it as tachyon thing to get back home to wherever he came from, or, use Barry to help power it, or, you know, steal it or something mm-hmm. like that. I don't know.
Okay.
That's kind of where I'm leaning now with the whole who is Wells.
Well, that's been so much fun to speculate about. And I think, like you said, Tom Cavanaugh's performance has made a huge difference in this character. But whatever, good or bad, whatever this character turns out to be, definitely has made it interesting and been an asset to the storyline of this show.
I like that they can take a character that, well, a character that we don't know from the comic books, but intimate that he is somebody that we are familiar with, and keep us guessing from week to week and having this kind of speculation. That's really creative on their part, instead of just going, oh, yeah, well, you know, his name's, you know, Professor Zoom. Oh, boom, there it is.
You know, I probably don't want to open this can of worms, but maybe I'll just crack it open, because I think as the season progresses and maybe by the finale, we may want to have a discussion about this. But whatever he turns out to be, good or bad, he's done things that Barry's not going to be happy with and is going to have to do something about. And he's clearly right. Got a path for Barry that Barry will have to fight against. So the way they have this show structured now, and I will say structure for sure, you know, because they kind of have bases of operations. You know, they've got the police station, they've got Joe's house, they've got Star Labs. And Star Labs is like the main focus for all of Flash's activities. You know, it's the mm-hmm. hub of where it kind of starts, and yeah. He's got the team that helps him. You know, it's like the Arrow Cave, or it's like Star Labs in the original Flash TV series. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's the home base.
It's the home base, right? So eventually, when Wells reveals his true self, whatever it is, is the show going to change that? Is the show going to change the landscape so drastically? Is Star Labs still going to be the home base? Is Wells still going to be there? Will he be gone? And, you know, how do people feel about that? That's something that would be interesting. Now, I'm somebody that is okay with big changes at some point, because I think if you let it go on too long, it starts to get stagnant. People get real comfortable with it, and then they don't like you changing it. But it gets stagnant, and then you can't progress with stories. So I would be okay with it, but
it's definitely going to fracture the team, mm-hmm. which would make for an interesting dynamic on the show. But yeah, I just can't foresee how that will work. What they're going to be maybe working at a CC Jitters, I guess. I don't know.
It's just a back table.
They'll be upstairs. They'll be at the table upstairs.
Okay.
It's pretty private up there, it seemed like. So.
There you go. So rent a private booth. Okay, so that I didn't even have that to talk about. I just it just occurred to me, like, you know what? I mean, mm-hmm. Wells, he's a bad dude in some way. And do they have the cojones to really destroy the foundation that they've spent all season building up just to tell a good story in the coming seasons, you know? So,
that's probably the best thing the writers can do, you know, just kind of write themselves into that corner. And it's like, how, you know,
totally
they have to come up with something creative to get out of it, which I think is
totally agree.
Worthwhile.
Now, Wells is talking of, he has this kind of interesting speech, when they're staking out, Stein's house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this speech, this what is home speech, you know, and let me kind of run down what it says here, because he says to Caitlin right there, uh-huh, sitting in the van, he says, because this is his home. That's why he's going to return. Right. I don't mean the actual house. I mean, Clarissa, she's his home. We all want to go home again. You know, where you feel safe, where we feel loved. Ronnie's your home. And Caitlin says, not anymore, you know, but I disagree with that. I still think Ronnie is clearly her home. I think she's in denial and has been for the last couple of weeks here. But
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where is Wells' home?
Hmm.
Because right now I feel like he feels comfortable. He feels loved at Star Labs with Caitlin and Sisko and Barry.
Well, if I stick to what I said earlier, I mean, if he is some sort of traveler from the future that's been stuck in the past here, then, you know, he's trying to get back home to 2024 or something like that, possibly.
Okay. Maybe.
That would be interesting. I mean, and again, you know, the way Kavanaugh read this line, it's like he says, when he said, we all want to go home again. You know,
it was
he's
like
including
he was,
himself in that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, it was like he was saying it without saying it.
It was wistful.
He didn't want her to really understand truly whatever it was he meant.
Right. But yeah, I agree. I think that he has found possibly some connections here at Star Labs that he was not expecting. Obviously, Hartley was a challenging person to work with, but he seems to have taken both Caitlin and Sisko under his wing. They both have Wells stories to, you know, to discuss. It's like, you know, the way he or what he said when he hired me kind of things, you know, and he really respects my work. You know, there's both Sisko and Caitlin have very nice things, very complimentary things to say about him, and not just about his work or the kind of person he is, but the way that he treats them or has treated them. You know, and he may be tough, but he's fair and stuff like that. So, mm-hmm. I think there's a case to be made that kind of Star Labs and that group is his home, is his family.
Yeah. Well, Caitlin says Ronnie's not her home anymore. So where does she think her home is? Star Labs? Not, she says not Ronnie, you know, what, karaoke bar? What?
I think she's definitely in denial, for that. She's so affected by seeing Ronnie, quote unquote, even though it's not him. And, you know, Professor Stein is, you know, calls her Kate, which she doesn't want to be called that by someone that looks like Ronnie. I mean, just, that's got to be horrible. Here's this person you think is your dead fiance, or you think your fiance is dead. And then, you know, they come back and they're talking to you, but it's not actually them.
Yep. Well, yeah. And she doesn't handle it well. Every time she sees him, she gets very emotional. So I don't think she's over him. Well, Ronnie, obviously, he's got two homes. He's after trying to get to Caitlin, which mm-hmm. I think is going to draw her back and realize what she's, you know, in denial about. And Stein, of course. You know, Barry's home, I think, it figures prominently in this show and in this episode, you know, is he was at home with Linda. So, and then, of course, you got Sherry's home. Sherry's home is open to the police, obviously, and Joe. And what's she got with with old mirrors, but okay. Linda, I mentioned Linda real quick, and we'll kind of wrap it up with a few things here because I want to share my thoughts on this particular episode. But what do you think about Linda?
She's a spice girl.
She's a spice girl?
Yes. She really likes spicy food, I mean.
Yes, she does. I got to respect that. She, what are you thinking about her? She's much different than Iris. And I think, didn't
she's
I mention
very,
this?
Well, she's the exact opposite of Iris. She knows exactly what she wants. She goes for it, and she doesn't want to waste time on what's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, she says she works in a tough job. She's a tough woman.
And I guess I could describe this as that she's threatening to Iris, even though Iris didn't realize she needed to have a threat against her.
Right.
Poor old Eddie hadn't even been in the show lately. So
he had one scene this week, and it was arresting the jumper.
Oh, yeah. Did he even say anything?
Yeah, the he's like, sir, you have a lot to live for, and then the Flash brings the guy down, and he's like, you're not going to let me go back up there, and he's like, no.
So I think I said, didn't I say this on the show, Iris is jealous.
I can't remember if you said that on the show, but yeah, I think she is. Now, the one thing that, for some reason, I got this weird vibe that Linda may not be all she appears to be.
No.
I've seen some people online who are like, they're not comfortable with the fact that she used this little phone tap to put her contact information on Barry's phone. They think that she may have gotten stuff off of his phone. And then this week she's taking calls from, well, she doesn't say who. I think she might say work, but, you know, so I think, like, part of me is just like, oh, it's, she goes to wash her hands so that Barry can go do his stuff. And it's just showing that both of the characters are kind of distracted by their professional lives and they're trying to have a relationship. But, you know, some people are saying that there's a conspiracy kind of going on out there that Linda may be part of something else and trying to get close to Barry because of who, a villain, somebody, I don't know.
Huh. Well, that, interesting, and I certainly wouldn't put it past the writers to throw something in like that because they make it
spicy.
Unpredictable and spicy. Yes, they try to do that. So I wouldn't put it past them. I don't see that. I think that the things that she was doing was more of an indication of what kind of character she is for the audience.
My initial thoughts were that there's nothing nefarious with her, but. Just watching it again and having heard what people say, I was kind of looking for, you know, for that and saying, maybe.
Well, and watching
the one
it,
thing that I didn't understand, and maybe you can clue me in on this, is, I mean, she's a pretty smart character, Linda is. She's talking to Iris saying, oh, did he ever have a girlfriend or when was his last girlfriend? And Iris is kind of just like, yeah, well, he had been in this, you know, his relationship kind of. You know, he was getting over somebody, so just give him some time. And it went from that to Linda going, why didn't you tell me you and Iris had a thing? And he's like, who told you that? And Iris is like, I don't think I said that. And I watched it again. She did not say that. And we can kind of see the guilt or the, I guess not guilt, but the repressed love or what, I don't know what she was exuding, but
just a look on her face is what you're talking
about.
Yeah.
Linda
right?
picked up on that and was like, Oh, it's you.
Well, she did,
which it seemed really weird. I don't know. I didn't buy that unless there's supposed to be something that happened off screen that we didn't see.
No, I mean, I think just, you know, she's seen how they interact with each other. You know, that little look, I noticed that look too. And then before that, right before, Iris was talking, you know, she said, you guys are best, Linda said, you guys are
BFFs.
Best friends. Yeah. And she goes, oh yeah, the best of the best. You know, I mean, I think it was just all in the kind of the way she carried. I think Linda just picked up on that. I did. I mean, it was pretty obvious.
Well,
me,
but
the way Iris
yeah,
was.
Because
I mean, we
I mean,
know, but
we know, and I'm just thinking like if, I mean, I don't have, you know, woman's intuition or anything like that, but
no,
No. I mean, I do because I have a wife, but, you know, that's it. I have it by proxy, I guess. So, yeah, I don't know. That just seemed weird. It seemed like a weird jump of Linda assuming that. And maybe she was fishing. I don't know. Maybe she was like, I wonder if it's Iris. And so she confronts Barry about it. And then, you know, it's like, hey, Josh, you know, what were you doing with so-and-so last night? How did you find out about that? It's like, oh, well, thanks for confirming that. I didn't really know.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It could be. It didn't bother me. I just figure, I mean, Linda's smart. And it seemed not obvious, but it seemed pretty evident that it was it had something to do with the two of them. I kind of chalked that particular part of it up to CW kind of storytelling. Whole relationship. I found it lighthearted and entertaining.
I enjoyed seeing what their relationship was doing. I thought they were going to do something different with him coming and eating the pepper because it's like, you know, he can't get drunk, right? It's because of his metabolism. So I would think that like the spice in these peppers and the stuff would just work differently on him. But yeah. I don't know.
I thought about that too. The only thing I could think of, well, I guess it is touching his skin. You know, I mean, he can get hurt. He gets, you know, bullet wounds and scratches and things like that. But, they just heal fast, so maybe it wouldn't bother him for as long. But I think it would still burn.
So yeah,
I'm more worried about whether he's going to be able to handle this relationship, you know, or if he's going to have to figure out some way to control his premature fast vibration.
No, they were good vibrations.
How do you explain that? What if she sees that? I mean, she felt it clearly, but...
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, how do you explain that? It's like, oh, yeah, I picked this up in, college or something.
Well, anyway, I'm enjoying that relationship with them, and I guess. Well, let me tell you one more thing, and then I'll share my final thoughts.
Okay,
on that, but
and I don't want to have derailed you from talking a little bit about Iris's jealousy because, like I said, I think there was something going on there.
Oh no, yeah, no, it's clear now, but before, you know, they didn't make it clear. She was like just into Eddie, which anyway. All right, so just one little thing. So we had a mirror in this, and you know, the silver nitrate, and Cisco was getting all on that mirror and using that mirror. It's a mirror. It's a mirror.
We were talking about mirrors last week, weren't we?
Yes, we were.
Cisco seems like a master with that mirror.
He does. I don't know. Now, I can't imagine them making Cisco mirror master, but
I don't think so. But
there is a mirror.
It is interesting to see mirrors do have a large part of the Flash legacy, you know, in them. So
they do. So okay, so let me just say real quick in wrapping all this up, and then we have some feedback I want to share for sure.
Oh, yeah.
The complaints that I heard from this episode, other than the blood spatters, because I kind of agree with you on that, were the very separate storylines, some of the lightheartedness, the silliness, the relationships that, you know, kind of the typical CW relationships you see on some of their other shows. And, you know, not enough comic book type storytelling, I guess.
I heard it was a filler episode.
Okay. All right.
Got that.
Now, you and I talk about this stuff. We break it down. We speculate. We share what we know based on, prior knowledge of the storylines and the characters. And so... we really kind of analyze it and can find things to criticize and dislike, you know, things like that.
Right.
But as I mentioned, you know, I am watching this show with my two daughters and my wife who are really getting into it. We actually really look forward to it. I think some of my shows, they kind of just sit down with me and watch because it's kind of an obligation, you know? Yeah, yeah, a little bit. Now I do the same thing with them. You know, I want to be with them and support them. This one they actually look forward to. And my daughters especially get excited about. There were parts of this that my oldest daughter was so excited. She was rolling around and on the couch, you know, and wondering what was going to happen next. It was very fun. But because of that, I see the entertainment value of this show from a different perspective, from people mm-hmm. that are not as into the comic book world and the and background and history of it as say we are and some other fans are. I see them enjoying it more than I hear people on the internet. And I'm wondering if maybe people are maybe overly critical because they know so much about it, when I think maybe you could just kind of sit back and enjoy the episode for what it was, entertaining with a few little exciting things here and there. So I, after seeing it from that point of view, I really kind of actually gave a second thought to how much I enjoyed the episode. And I had a lot of fun with this episode, even with the things that I maybe think took me out of it a little bit. So I'm giving this one a thumbs
up. I totally had a good time with this episode. I wasn't rolling around on the couch or anything like that, but
you weren't.
I was very excited. You know, I was, like I said earlier, I think I was whooping and hollering for the characters, and you know, my wife, she watches the show, but she gets up. She's a teacher as well, so she has to get up early. So she's usually doing something, and I don't want to disturb her by having the sound on. So I put headphones on.
Mm-hmm.
So she can look up and see the show, but she's not hearing anything. And it must have been very tough because I was laughing and giggling and woo, you know, throughout the episode. So.
What were you doing? Were you doing that when Ronnie Raymond was sitting on the table with his shirt off? Or was that a different bar? I think my wife was doing that. Maybe that's what I heard.
I think I might have been doing it when Sherry answered the door.
Oh, there you go.
And then she closed the door, and then she opened it again, and then she closed the door, and then she opened it again. But maybe I was just rewinding it. I don't remember.
No, I was working for the story. All right. Well, anyway, I'm just going to say I'm going to start looking at these from kind of multiple different perspectives, you know, just to see the entertainment value in these, because I think maybe that does happen in our culture right now, is we're just over critical of certain things when I think we could enjoy them more. But hey, that's just personal opinion. Feel free to send me hate emails about how wrong I am.
Well, that's just the internet, though. I mean,
of course,
I think the internet is just overly critical in general.
I agree with you completely.
So
they're all a bunch of jerks. Except for a few of our listeners who sent us some feedback. Hey, that was pretty good.
That was a great
segue. That was one
segue.
Of my more successful
that
segues. Of course, I've now derailed it, mentioning that I segued. But I want to share a couple pieces of feedback that we got. One from Ken, who had a thought about Hartley and his hearing aids, okay?
Yes.
He says, just quickly, I think Hartley's hearing aids were totally normal. Rather, I think it was the little gizmo that Cisco had emitted a high-pitched noise. So he's referring – we were talking about when Cisco and Hartley were having it out last week, and Cisco had that little device. Well, let me finish this. Hartley removed his disgusting hearing aid. I agree with that. So he would not be affected by the noise. Just a theory, but from the way that scene plays out, that makes sense to me. Also, it would be really silly of those Star Labs people to just leave him in, like you said.
bad guys in the jail cells there.
I agree with that, but didn't he do something that affected Cisco? Didn't he take the hearing aids out and then do something?
Yeah, it was the first time. When they were fighting outside the Star Labs, that was I agree with Ken. I think that was the sound coming from the hearing aids, from Cisco's device, but through the hearing aids. But yeah, then at the computer, whatever room they were in with that, when he pulled the hearing aid out, there was feedback, and that, well, it was also from the hearing aid, but it was Cisco could hear that, and I don't know if that's because he pulled the hearing aid out of his head or what.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was some kind of feedback. I guess that would make sense. So I guess I could play that in my head the way that that Ken says. So
yeah.
Either way, yeah, I would hope that they would be smart enough to take care of it. But again, I think I said this last week too. He might have MacGyverized it. You know, did something that changed it that they didn't know about.
Right. Right. Well, because he had that. I mean, that one was really explosive from the previous episode.
Yeah,
that blew the door open. So
exactly. He's some pretty talented with those things, but
yeah.
I wouldn't want to keep that in my ear personally. But
nope.
And then real quick, I also wanted to thank Matt who sent us a message on Facebook. We were asking about when Barry had gotten shot in the neck with the bullet, and he kind of used his flashy sense, because he doesn't have spider sense, right?
right, exactly.
To detect it and used his super speed. And we were kind of asking if he'd ever done that before, or maybe I was asking that or something.
Yeah, I think you were asking that. Or you may have remembered it in some fashion, but you just couldn't. You weren't sure.
Yeah, maybe. But he sent us in actually the issue that something like that had happened, and it was a Wally West Flash. And let's see, I have the number here. It was Flash Volume 2, Number 30 from September of 1989, which is definitely right when I was heavy into the Flash comics there.
That's pretty funny because he sent us here's a link to a page that talks about that. I don't know if I'll be able to do anything else. Ah, screw it. Here's the,
yeah, he kept
here's the cover.
More stuff.
Here's a couple of the scenes. I found this online. So.
It actually happened when he was when Wally West was in a movie theater with his girlfriend. I think it was Linda Park back then. I think it was somebody else. I can't remember who said.
Yeah, it would probably have been Linda.
Okay. Well, anyway, they were watching Batman, the Tim Burton Batman, and it happened in a movie theater. Somebody opened fire in the theater, and he felt it on his neck, and then had to go around the movie theater finding all the other bullets, and then the shooter. So
very cool,
interesting.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thank you very much for digging that up. All right. Well, man, there were quite a few little references in here. I'm going to let you run them down real fast, and I'll try not to interrupt.
Okay.
Unless I want to.
Stop it. We had the. We had a reference to Two Streets, 52nd and Wade. Obviously, a shout out to the New 52 and 52 Universe and all the stuff that DC does, but also the most prolific Flash writer or the most prolific Flash writer of recent times, Mark Wade. We had mention of Quentin Quayle that we talked about earlier. That actually was a character in the comics. He worked with Stein actually at the place called Concordance Research. Before Martin Stein became Firestorm. Clarissa Stein is actually Martin's ex-wife in the comics, not like a widow or, you know, presumed widow. The Conway Prize for Scientific Achievement is most likely a shout out to Firestorm creator Jerry Conway. Barry mentions going to see Mal Duncan, a jazz player. And in the comic books, Mal Duncan is a former Teen Titan and who goes by the name of Guardian, but also Hornblower, Herald, and Vox.
And so, sometimes you just got to nail down a superhero name. Come on.
I hate these guys. They just can't, you know, figure it out.
Just
so.
Stick with it. I'm talking to you, Robin. Nightwing.
Red Robin. Yeah.
Maybe Arsenal, too.
Well, yeah, Arsenal had some problems there. So, and then Stein asks if they have a 1982 vintage of this wine. I'm not even going to try to pronounce that. But that is a reference to the first year that Firestorm appeared, which is 1982. The Quantum Splitter looks a lot like the Firestorm costume design, which we also saw on the door. And we talked about this in one of the previous episodes, on the door to the... particle accelerator. And then someone mentions Ronnie or Firestorm having a flame on moment, which is sort of a cross company reference to the Fantastic Four and Johnny Storm, which is his signature phrase every time he turns on his flame as the Human Torch. He says flame on.
That's kind of a nice little nod. That had to be on purpose.
Yeah, I totally believe that. Yes.
All right. Well, all right. So good references again. Good talk. Hey, a scientist's work is never finished, you know, and until we bring him home. So I think it's about time to go home. So you and I have to run.
Sounds good. If you guys enjoyed the episode, please be sure to leave feedback for us on iTunes. We love reading all the things that people have to say there. You can also contact us by email like Ken did at scarletvelocity@randomchatter.com or tweet us at Scarlet Velocity or post and visit our Facebook page like Matt did at facebook.com/scarletvelocitypodcast.
Yeah, share us your favorite kind of ghost pepper.
The hot kind.
The hot kind. Okay. They're all hot. It's the kind that, you know, rips the inside of your mouth. That's what you want. You can also check out our other shows, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files at randomchatter.com. Also, all shows are available in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, if you enjoy this podcast, please be sure to tell your friends. And remember, life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for The Flash can be found at www.cwtv.com. The Flash and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.